The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Joined by an old friend who you will hear later this afternoon or evening on many of these stations and many more, Mark R. Levin, the great one. Of course, he's the host of Levin TV. He also runs Landmark Legal Foundation. He's the host of the Fox News show Life, Liberty, and Levin. And he is the author of, I believe now, six consecutive New York Times number one bestseller. I believe his new book, Unfreedom of the Press, is now number one on the New York Times list. Unfreedom of the Press is a fantastic read. Unfreedom of the Press should be your next order from Amazon. Mark Levin, how are you, my friend?
I'm good, Hugh. How are you, buddy?
I am great. Is it number one? Am I right about that?
Yes, it's going to be number one for a month, but who's counting?
Who's counting? Well, congratulations. I did not think anyone could do six in a row. But let me begin. I want to throw you a softball. This is so consistent with Unfreedom of the Press. George Stephanopoulos talking to Donald Trump last night has this exchange, which I think is so indicative of what you write about in Unfreedom of the Press. Roll it, please.
Article 2, I would be allowed to fire Robert Mueller. There was not, assuming I did all of the things I said I want to fire him. Number one, I didn't. He wasn't fired. Okay, number one, very importantly. But more importantly, Article 2 allows me to do whatever I want. Article 2 would have allowed me to fire him.
So it sounds
but
like
I wasn't going to fire. You know why? Because I watched Richard Nixon go around firing everybody, and that didn't work out too well. So, very simply, Article 2 would allow me to do it.
Article 2 of the Constitution outlines the powers of the presidency. And the president's defenders argue he cannot commit obstruction of justice while exercising those powers.
You talk about Article 2. So your position is that you can hire or fire anybody, stop or start
that is the position of a lot of great lawyers. That's the position of some of the most talented lawyers. And you have to have a position like that because you're the president. But without even bringing up Article 2, which absolutely gives you every right.
So a president can't obstruct justice.
Stop. Mark Levin, do you hear what George Stephanopoulos just did there?
A nasty guy, isn't he? I mean, this part of the problem is, and I'm being very clear about this, Hugh, he is a supposed journalist. It's one thing for you or me to be on these cable shows, and everybody knows who we are. We worked for Reagan. We're conservatives. Does he sound like a journalist there? I mean, first of all, the president understands Article 2 better than George Stephanopoulos. The fact is the president can fire whomever he wants who's in a constitutional position. What you're getting at and what he kind of slimed into there was, if you're firing somebody for the purpose of obstructing an investigation of yourself, which the president did not do, and they're not presidential appointees, let's say he reaches down and fires an assistant U.S. attorney as an example, that raises a totally different question as far as the Supreme Court is concerned. So that's number one. Number two, he didn't fire anybody other than the FBI head who was immediately replaced. He didn't fire Mueller. and as Bill Barr brought up, when he talked about firing Mueller, and he denies it, but when he was talking about firing Mueller with his own White House counsel, he was talking about him being conflicted, not to obstruct any investigation. And so he's aware of what Nixon did. He's aware of the consequences on impeachment. He didn't obstruct anybody. He didn't take foreign opposition research. He didn't do any of these things. And in my book, I call these pseudo-events. There's no news here.
There is no statement by the president that he cannot obstruct justice. He's arguing about Article 2. And so having extended the courtesy of a 30-hour interview to George Stephanopoulos, for George to mischaracterize what the president said. So you're saying that a president cannot obstruct justice. He did not say that. He didn't. Right. I listened to it. You listened to it. He didn't say that. And this is my objection to the press, is they will not allow anyone to answer if they don't like the answer they're getting.
But fundamentally, this whole question about obstruction, why is he being asked about obstruction?
Agree.
He's being asked about obstruction because Mueller, who was a rogue prosecutor, wrote an entire volume two, or his staff did, raising this issue of obstruction without even challenging the Attorney General and the OLC opinions on whether or not you can indict a sitting president. I don't think you can. My view has changed on this over the years. But that's beside the point. Mueller never pressed the case, ever, if you read Volume 2. And yet they keep talking about obstruction. A prosecutor raises it. There was no due process. There was no court hearing. There was no challenge. There's no adjudication of this. The Democrats pick it up in the House, and, of course, the media pushes it, too. So we're here talking about something that never happened, ever.
Something that never happened. And it's an obsession of the media, and that is why I want to go back to unfreedom of the press right now. I think I sent you a note that you may have seen. I find on page 21 and 22 of Unfreedom of the Press a list of journalists who moved from the journalistic organizations they were with into the Obama administration. I have to read it because it makes a point. Time managing editor Rex Stengel moved from the State Department. Douglas France, who worked for the New York Times and the LA Times, was an assistant secretary of state for public affairs. Boston Globe Online Politics, Glenn Johnson was a senior advisor at the State Department. Washington Post writer Stephen Barr moved to the Labor Department. Washington Post congressional reporter Shaley Murray became VP Biden's comms director. Rosa Brooks, a columnist for the LA Times, took a position with the Undersecretary of Defense for Policy. The Washington Post, Desson Thompson, left the paper to serve as a speechwriter for the U.S. Ambassador to Britain. Roberta Baskin, one-time CBS News investigator, joined HHS. Washington Post Warren Bass, an Outlook section deputy editor, joined Susan Rice at the UN. Education Week reporter David Hoff moved to the Education Department. CNN senior producer Sasha Johnson joined DOT. Chicago Tribune Jill Zuckerman moved to DOT. Rick Weiss of the Washington Post moved to the White House Office of Science and Technology. Former CBS and ABC reporter Linda Douglas joined the comms department in the Obama White House. New York Times reporter Eric Dash moved to the Treasury Department. CNN's Anish Raman worked for the Obama campaign and speechwriter for President Obama. Jim Sciutto, who's been on the show, he's a friend of mine, was with ABC News, became the chief of staff to the United States ambassador to China, Gary Locke. Now he's back at CNN. San Francisco Chronicle environmental reporter Kelly Zito joined the EPA. You also point out MSNBC's Chris Matthew worked for Jimmy Carter and Tip O'Neill. CNN's Chris Cuomo is the brother of Andrew Cuomo. Jake Tapper, a friend of mine, used to work for a Democratic congresswoman. ABC's Cokie Roberts was Hale Boggs' daughter-in-law. And, of course, George Stephanopoulos, we tell you about. I've never seen it laid out, Mark Levin, as concisely in three pages as you did in Unfreedom of the Press.
Well, and it could be longer. That's all I could find. I mean, even if I had another year, I could probably find 20 more from the Capitol Hill and so forth. This is the problem. The problem is, as I lay out in Chapter 1 as well, what's really going on here is not a freedom of the press, a defense of the freedom of the press, or action by freedom of the press. We have a mass modern media that is progressive, that is advocates for the Democrat Party and is involved in social activism. They're not giving the American people information. You know, I understand that the objective truth, it's imperfect. The pursuit of it is imperfect, but life is imperfect. It's a good goal. You know, you ought to give it a try every now and then if you're a news person. But the opposite is destructive. And so day in and day out, depending on what you're watching or you're reading, you are pounded and pounded and pounded, like with George Stephanopoulos nonsense. We're going on day three or four here with something that never happened. As an example, the president never took opposition research from a foreign country. Hillary Clinton paid for that. So the narrative is always in one direction. And I'll give you an example, Hugh. Has there been a leak to the Washington Post or the New York Times that has actually been helpful to the president? I can't think of one.
No, and you know what's the most amazing thing is that Spygate is out there. It is an iceberg of a story. It is a giant story. It has got Pulitzer written all over it. And I believe we're going to find serious crimes by very senior people at the Department of Justice, the FBI, and possibly the intelligence community. And it's all going to come out because Durham is not going to let go of this. Lindsey Graham told me this on Friday. You know, he wouldn't want Durham after him either. He's worked for every attorney general, and he's a tough guy. And there isn't one leak. You know why? Because people aren't looking.
Mm-hmm. You're exactly right. And when people call my show and they say, you know, why doesn't the press admit that for two and a half years there was no Russia collusion? Because the press was involved in this. Who do they think they were leaking to? I mean, over 2 years ago when I said, just look at the newspapers, there was obviously a FISA application here. that the president was spied on or his staff was. I took it out of the newspapers, had to publish reports. There were leaks coming. You worked at Justice and I did. I was chief of staff. There were leaks obviously coming from the senior level of the FBI because they're in charge of the traffic, the criminal traffic. They know where everything's going, and they were leaking. And it was obvious they were leaking to the New York Times. They were leaking to the Washington Post. They were leaking to McClatchy and some of the other places. And you pull it together and you can see it. So the media have been facilitating, if not worse, these police state tactics, and they want nothing to do with discovering who was behind it.
They don't. Now, let's move on to why the problem has grown up. First of all, you make a very important point. The distinction at Fox News between news programming and opinion program is much better delineated than at CNN and MSNBC. I work for MSNBC. The statistics gathered by the Shorenstein Center suggest that the Fox coverage overall is much more even-handed than the other news outlets, which are overwhelmingly negative. This is the Shorenstein Center at Harvard. This is not actually up for debate, but I don't think our friends on the left will ever admit this, Mark Levin.
No, and what the study shows in the first 100 days of the Trump presidency, Trump has never had a honeymoon. Ever. They started attacking him when he was a candidate, and they haven't stopped. There really hasn't been a peaceful transition of power because they don't believe there should have been any transition of power. So this is really unique, and it's coming all from the left, and it's coming from the media. The media give the Democrat Party mouth and support and prod them to impeach and do all these other things. And what this study shows in the first 100 days, again, you're right, it's a Harvard group, over 90% of the stories were negative on NBC, CBS, and CNN. Over 80%, 87% New York Times. I mean, everything's pretty much over 80%. There's a couple over 70%. Fox at 52, 48 positive. It's a close call. And they said in every dimension, every area of coverage, it is overwhelmingly negative. I also have one in there on Pew during the Obama administration,
yes,
which was the reverse. Now, look, you have to be Helen Keller not to see and hear what's going on here, which is this is a push. This is the progressives who have devoured the government, pretty much the economy, pretty much Hollywood. And they didn't leave the media alone, as I point out in the book. John Dewey specifically targeted the media, and he said, just like education, we can't just report news, whatever that means.
You quote Walter Lippmann, and this is the one area I disagree with you about, the world being too complicated for inattentive or busy individuals.
That's what
I know. He said that, and I can understand elitism coming from elites who actually read. But what bothers me the most, Mark, is that we are being condescended to now by many people who do not read and by many people who have never even picked up a Constitution, read a single case, have no idea about political theory, about any of the five books that you have bestsellers.
I agree with you, but I don't think he means elites in the sense of particularly intelligent. I think what he means is they are positioned to gather the information, launder it through the progressive agenda. He was a hardcore progressive. He was a socialist.
Initially. Yes, he was. Yeah.
And he was sympathetic to the Russian Revolution. And he came around to the fact that it wasn't working. Why? Because the people are too stupid. That's what he concluded. They're too stupid for socialism. Go ahead.
But he was really a smart guy, even though he was wrong. And when you look back at Dewey, another smart guy who was wrong. Wilson, a really smart guy who was a eugenicist. He was wrong.
Yeah.
Today we have Ben Rhodes. He's a failed novelist. It's just not right that the media is telling us this when they don't have any chops.
But it's the same way throughout the progressive movement in government, in Hollywood. These aren't particularly smart people. The masterminds, by masterminds, I don't mean, as I wrote in my prior book, that they're particularly smart. Many of them come out of universities. Many of them don't. I mean, look at the bureaucracy today. The bureaucracy isn't filled with that brain trust here and there. If you manage to get in the government and you become a member of the civil service and you become a member of the union, you can't be fired.
You can't be.
And
nope.
People are hired not because they're particularly expert in anything. But that's the big lie, this whole notion of scientific approach and experts and all the rest. There is no scientific approach. That's baloney. And these experts aren't experts. They can't be experts on everything. And yet, this is the mentality in the media today.
It is, and it is of privilege. And, you know, we hear about white privilege and senior privilege. Also, the real privilege is by people with microphones who condescend to their audience. Now, I've watched your show. You don't do that. My show doesn't do this. I listen to your show. We don't condescend to our audiences. We take them seriously. The great Andrew Malcolm, you quote, as far too many political journalists have been unable to digest and been allowed to corrupt their professionalism, one simple fact that they lost. If there was a concussion protocol for journalists like there is in the NFL, 90% of us would still be in the concussion protocol. They have not recovered, Mark Levin.
And they're not going to, because they're driven ideologically. People have to understand, and I hope when they read this book, they will understand. There really is no reformation because there's no circumspection. And the bottom line is that the modern mass media today are on a road to self-destruction. That's why, no offense, CNN has no ratings. That's why MSNBC is no model after Trump. That's why New York Times had to be bailed out by a billionaire in Mexico. That's why the Washington Post had to be bailed out. I was going bankrupt by Bezos. It's competition. It's technology. It's new platforms. It's the Internet. With all the problems, with all the perverts on the Internet, with all the problems with Silicon Valley, the fact is you can still find smart people, real journalists all over the world providing information. These I call the new pamphleteers. And technology will provide us with even more news platforms and so forth. What we're getting now is a mixture of propaganda and pseudo-events that push one direction, big government, centralized government. The media to me today is the Praetorian Guard of government. The Patriot Press before the revolution pushed the revolutionary ideas, pushed the idea of a revolution, talked about the Reformation, talked about Locke and Montesquieu. They weren't even really about news. They were about liberty and representative government and property rights, all these things in the Declaration of Independence. They wanted to fundamentally transform government. They didn't believe the monarchy in England should have an iron fist control over the colonies. Today, it's the reverse. Fundamental transformation. Hold on, just want to make the point. Fundamental transformation, not of government, but of the people, of the civil society. It's complete opposite. I'm sorry.
If they understand it. I don't even know that the members of the media understand. It doesn't matter, but I do believe the reformation of the media begins with the insistence that smart people be given microphones. I love Levin on Sunday night. It's the first show since Buckley. Really, the first hour since Buckley, where they've said, go at big ideas. I tried to sell MSNBC on a similar idea, and they weren't buying it at all. They didn't want that.
That's the point.
Well, I just think they don't think it'll sell. It's not
that's
ideological.
The point. But listen to me. When you look at Jeff Zucker at CNN, it is ideological. When you look at the New York Times, I have an entire chapter on the New York Times, Chapter 6. It is ideological. When you look at the progressive movement, when I talk about in the first chapter, among other chapters, devouring these different institutions, including the media. It is ideological. It doesn't mean everybody who practices it says, look at me, I'm an ideological leftist.
True.
That's groupthink. That's pack mentality. And you won't find diversity in most newsrooms, like you just pointed out at MSNBC, because they don't want it. And so they don't have it. And the interesting thing about Fox is you have a primetime lineup. These guys don't pretend to be journalists. But they're under constant attack, because they won't conform. They won't conform. And nobody says freedom of speech, freedom of the press when they're attacking those guys. You can attack Fox and those guys all you want. That's okay. But don't dare point to Jim Acosta, because then you're really attacking like Stalin did, you know, the media.
Molly Hemingway, who I know you admire as much as I do, has noted that not only does elite media reject the narrative that you and I believe in, which is actually history, they get angry that we don't agree with them. They actually get physically upset with us that we will not buy in, that we will push back, and that we will argue that Donald Trump has Article II authorities, which are as great as Lyndon Johnson's and John F. Kennedy's and Barack Obama's. They get angry. So, Mark, here's the key question. I think unfreedom of the press is step one. Step two is, what do we do next? Because we really can't function without a free press. And right now, the media cable channels are down to 1%, 1%, and 2%. Most of America has turned off the news. They don't believe them. They don't trust. They trust you and me. People that listen to our show trust us. But we can't really progress as a people if we can't identify Iran as a threat, if we can't talk about Xi Jinping being a new Mao. Where are we going to get back a common platform to talk about this stuff?
You know, this is a good, great question, and here's my answer to you. It's happening before your eyes, but you just don't see it. These old platforms, and old I would even include cable in that respect, they're dying. They're losing subscribers. They're losing viewers. The American people are not as Walter Lippmann said. The American people are not as the progressives believe. We are smart people. I mean, at least half of us are. And so we abandon them. That's why Rachel Maddow's ratings are falling off the table. And that's why CNN has no ratings. And I went through the list. And there's even more about even network news and so forth. There's no magic bullet. The American people are deciding this. And meanwhile, because we have a relatively free society, there are other people out there, we just don't know who they are, who are innovating, who are creating, who are producing alternatives. And these alternatives that we can't even imagine right now will exist in 10 years, 15 years, 5 years. I interviewed George Gilder on Life, Liberty, and Levin on Fox. He said the Israelis and the Japanese are developing an entirely new platform outside the Internet. He said Facebook and Instagram and Google, these things will all be landlines like telephone lines in 10 years. There wasn't an Internet 25 years ago of the kind that we have today, that we use today, and it wasn't even meant to be used for media and so forth. So my view is things are progressing the way they're supposed to progress. There's going to be a lot of damage in the meantime. They do a lot of damage. They're trying to drag down Trump's ratings for reelection. I got all that. But over the next 10 or 15 or 20 years, I think you're going to have trouble finding a viable cable channel. I think you're going to have trouble finding a viable newspaper. And it doesn't mean it's the end of the country. I think the First Amendment and freedom of speech and freedom of the press are going to be stronger than ever because of all the competition and all the other platforms. These, again, will be the new pamphleteers, just like colonial times. Nobody said there would be a relative handful, an oligopoly of media outlets through which we get all of our news. That's a relatively new idea. So if they go away, other things will replace it as long as the government stays out of it.
Last question, Mark Levin. Do we have enough time? I'm looking at the PRC. I'm looking at a state. Nixon used to say the Chinese think in terms of millennia, the Russians centuries, the Europeans generations, Americans decades. We have President Xi Jinping, who's president for life. They have facial recognition technology. They have a closed Internet system that we have sold them the tools of our own destruction from Silicon Valley. Do we have enough time for freedom to win?
We don't if the Democrats keep doing what they're doing and if they win the presidency. This is the first president in modern times who understands China's the great threat, and it is a great threat. It's a great threat in terms of national security and the economy. Most of its advances have been stolen from us. It has no intention, at least right now, of changing its ways. It's building a military not for its own defense or even regional defense. It's building a military to defeat us, and they are an enemy. This president understands it. I'm not a tariff guy. I'm all in favor of his tariffs with China, all in favor of them. You know, we already have, as you know, Commerce and State Department controls on exports. And what the president has basically done is he's applied them broadly to China because China cheats in every respect. It's not a balance of trade with China that worries me. It's their military that worries me. And they're extremely repressive now. They have basically surrendered any idea of being a republic or a democracy. And do we have enough time? Not if we don't continue to build up our military and prepare for them. They are a grave danger to this country.
I want to close with, I cheated, one more question. A week ago Sunday, the president won a big round with Mexico, and he got a secret agreement that was revealed on Sunday. For a week, the media denied that it existed. I was mocked. I was attacked because I'd done some reporting. I knew it existed. They've agreed to end asylum by making themselves a safe third country asylum people, that you can no longer come from Guatemala to our border. That's agreed to. The media denied it happened, and now they will not cover it, Mark Levin. Do you think that the American people know, by ways diverse and sometimes very difficult to sense or see, that they're being lied to about that?
We're going to find out, aren't we, in less than 2 years. And again, this is why I write about an entire chapter on pseudo-events. The president calls it fake news. He's more right than he even knows, and he's instinctively right about this. And that's a concept that was developed by Daniel Borstein, professor from Chicago, who at one time headed the Library of Congress.
Library of Congress, yeah.
He, brilliant, brilliant man. He wrote a whole book on it that basically most of the news we receive is the reality in the newsroom, not the reality to the American people. They project their own pseudo-events. he would call a guy like Jim Acosta a pseudo-news guy who just focuses on himself and his own ego. He says, none of this is news. None of this is true. And it's so true. When you look at the, you talk about that, you look at the entire so-called manufactured crisis on the border. That was their phrase. They've surrendered that now because they know it's a real crisis. Or the Russia collusion stuff, which was a lie for 2 years. I mean, you can point over and over and over again to these various issues. And this is why I want to underscore, Hugh. We're the ones who support freedom of the press. That's why I call this book Unfreedom of the Press. You can't abuse this authority this way and then keep wrapping yourself in freedom of the press when, in fact, you're eviscerating freedom of the press. And by challenging these institutions, we're not attacking freedom of the press. We're strengthening freedom of the press because there's no policing system that these people have since, not to complicate things, since New York Times versus Sullivan. There's no check on them. I don't want government checks, but there's no check even in the private sector unless we create these new platforms and unless people like you and me write books and challenge them.
Mark Levin, Unfreedom of the Press, a number one New York Times bestseller, six in a row. My hat is off to you. I don't think anyone's done that. I actually don't think anyone other than Daniel Silva's done that, but that's fiction. So congratulations on Unfreedom of the Press. Thank you, my friend. Talk to you again soon. See you soon, I hope.
And God bless you. Thanks, you. Take care, buddy.
Be well.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.